Thanks for listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Rick Zingari, and I just want you to know that we've edited this podcast for brevity, so you hear all the good stuff quicker. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Almost all, if not all, of the customers who lost power in that late October wind and rainstorm have their electricity back on now. But it took a long time, longer than for most storms, and more Vermonters were impacted than normal. Last Wednesday, Washington Electric Cooperative CEO Patty Richards told us that more than 60% of their entire customer base lost power in the storm. She described it as overwhelming, and the cost to repair all the lines is piling up. Richards says she's anticipating some help from the federal government, and those assessments are going on this week after the state identified more than $4.5 million in damages to public infrastructure. Green Mountain Power Communications head Kristen Carlson said the price tag for GMP, which won't get federal aid, is even higher. They anticipate $15 or $20 million in cleanup costs. Now, storms like this are built into the models for utilities. Outages are part of the business. But they can only withstand so many storms of this magnitude. And if climate change models are correct, we're going to be seeing more of these storms. So something's got to give. Today on the show, we're going to look at how Vermont's utilities are looking ahead and dealing with climate change. Is the fundamental business model being upended? Tweaked? Will these utilities be able to stay in business in the energy future? Mary Powell is president and CEO of Green Mountain Power. The company delivers power to about 260,000 Vermonters, which makes it the biggest utility in the state. She's in the studio with us today. Hi, Mary.
Hi, it's wonderful to be here. Thanks.
Ken Nolan is general manager for the Vermont Public Power Supply Authority, known as VPSA. It's a group of 12 small municipal utilities across Vermont that give power to about 30,000 customers. And so they work as a consortium to do things like bring IT services and financing to larger projects. Ken, it's a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Thanks. Great to be here.
And Christine Halquist is CEO of Vermont Electric Cooperative, which provides electricity to 32,000 co-op customers and members across Vermont. She's in Washington, D.C., attending the National Rural Cooperative Association. Christine, it's nice to have you on the phone with us.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
So, you know, there are a lot of reasons why utilities need to think about a change in the model and a change in power sources and even a change in the distribution, not least of which is the mandate from the state that it requires 25% renewable energy by 2025, and that goes up higher as the decades go on. But beyond the mandates and beyond the calls from consumers to have more sustainability, to rely more on renewables, there is this question of, even if you were the most cynical, most evil business corporation in the world and all you cared about was the bottom line, don't you have to change because you can't manage to be in the black in our energy future with these kinds of storms? Mary Powell?
Yeah, I mean, Jane, that's a great question and a great framing of the issue. You know, from Green Mountain Power's perspective, we've been leaning into a radically different future for Vermonters, largely because it's what our customers tell us they want. So point number one, because we talk a lot about being customer obsessed and loving our customers, and we do, and we want to deliver on what they want us to do. And we launched a vision around being low carbon, low cost, incredibly reliable. And what that did is that was about 2008, and that work started to really then point us in the direction that we're headed into now, which is the future that we see the way to deliver the kind of future that our customers tell us they want, that is economically viable, is really to embrace the transition to a home, community, and business-based energy system. And so really, as you think about it, to turn the existing energy system of delivery inside out and have it not that there's this big bulk system delivering all of your needs in a somewhat paternalistic way historically, but really to move it towards one that embraces energy independence in a way that will, to the point of where you started on storms, will provide a much more economic way of delivering energy in the future. So, you know, that is, you know, from our perspective, that is the largest reason to want to lean into a very different future. We've been concerned about climatic events for over a decade now at Green Mountain Power. And there's no doubt about it that what we saw last week is it's not a matter of of if, it's a matter of when. So we anticipate that, you know, at some point we will face, you know, a situation where maybe 50 or 60% of the entire state is without power. And so we're moving as quickly as we can to a very, very different energy future for Vermonters.
Christine Halquist, what about for you? I mean, is this something that Vermont Electric Cooperative is thinking about in the same way that Green Mountain Power is, or do you have a different perspective?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that Mary Powell said it well, and I think for Vermont Electric Co-op, you know, we were one of the early innovators of smart grid. We were recognized nationwide as leading in terms of innovation. And I do see, you know, that the issue that you're talking about is, you know, we use the term grid resiliency down at the Washington level, and there's a whole bunch of things that are challenging our grid right now, in addition to those storms, which really drive, I think, to the direction that Mary has stated. You know, if you look at this morning, North Korea had this threat of, you know, setting an electromagnetic pulse, which could take the grid down. You know, we talk about issue of cybersecurity and the addition, you know, and the increasing number of storms and the volume of the storms. But I will say, you know, one of the things, this storm, you know, had some characteristics to it that were exceptional. And the actual reliability of the grid, our grid, and I'll speak for all the Vermont utilities, has continued to improve significantly. And in this, we do have storms on a fairly regular basis, but I want to remind you the last storm was 2014, so we went through an extended period of time without a storm. I do think as we move to a distributed model, we'll be able to put in protections that will help us in these storms. For example, as we move to more community models and we address some of the technology to allow solar to continue to operate when the power is out and we have distributed storage, that'll reduce the impact of those storms. Down here in Washington, they call it fractal grid. Moving to a fractal grid is the way to improve reliability, and we're following that same path.
Ken Nolan, is it different for very small public utilities like the ones that you represent? I mean, at the community level, it's a different scale. So how does that change the way your members are thinking?
Yeah, I think it's a different scale, and it's also, to some degree, a different mindset. Most of the managers of the electric utilities are the village or town manager, so they're also dealing with the property taxes, with the water bills, the sewer bills.
Plowing.
So our folks tend to be focused on reliability, but also focused on cost as a primary driver. And I think the combination of small scale and the real focus on keeping the lowest cost tends to put us a little bit behind the other utilities in adopting some of these cutting edge transitional type of activities, storage and other things. But even our members are starting to really think about how do we make this transition to a distributed grid? How do we accept solar? How do we take advantage of some of the metering that's out there now that wasn't available 20 years ago, but some of the other utilities put in 5 or 6 years ago? We're seeing that transition actually accelerate over time, and the storms like this just cause that discussion to raise to the surface and pushes things a lot quicker than what we have seen in the past.
It does. I mean, do you see this conversation happening sort of in relation to the storm last week?
Not so much in relation to this storm, but in general, when we're seeing the change in the climate and how it affects public policy and how we operate, I think municipal utilities tend to operate on a very slow time scale, like normal towns or government operations. But we're seeing these questions get raised and the members try to adopt technologies at a much quicker pace than what we've seen in the past.
So what technologies are they looking at in particular that, you know, maybe weren't accessible to smaller utilities a decade ago or even 5 years ago, but are now something that they're considering?
Yeah. So advanced metering, some of the smart grid technologies that the large utilities in Vermont installed in 2009 when the federal ARRA grant was made available. The small utilities decided they couldn't afford to do that. We're now going back and relooking at those technologies. We're actively looking at solar development, not only the net metering, but actually installing solar as a public utility and offering that to the community. We're also starting to look more actively at storage. So in the past, storage technology, something of that nature that's cutting edge, would have taken us 10 or 15 years after it became commonplace to adopt. And now we're seeing the members want to really take advantage of that and put it in now, even though it's maybe still considered not bleeding edge, but cutting edge technology. They're really trying to adopt it.
I just want to back up for 1 second, Mary Powell, and ask you to treat me like an alien and describe, because we keep talking about distributed systems, we keep talking about a network, and like the back page description of what our grid looks like, and then we can talk about how it's changing.
Sure. So, I mean, I think the most important thing to keep in mind around the grid that we have today is, you know, it truly is – actually, I call it frequently grandpa's grid, and I realize it's actually probably like great-great-grandpa's grid because it really started forming in the late 1800s. And it really is a way of thinking about energy delivery that is about huge, big plants and moving energy over, you know, lines over great distances to homes, communities, and businesses. Combined with then integrating smaller resources, but it really is truly sort of – that's why it's called a bulk power delivery system, because it is really a very large and historic way to think about energy delivery. And I want to add, as we're talking about this, I think the other thing to keep in mind is, to me, it's not just about climate change. It's about the convergence of what I think is happening on a national scale, which is we have climatic change, we have consumers wanting a different kind of future. And for the first time, I think one of the things that is most exciting to me about being in this business now versus when I joined it and I was hungry for this kind of transformative change is we're seeing the technologies dramatically advancing. So during last week's event, we had customers that we've worked with to do solar and storage that were carried through the entire event who saw no disruption.
Because they have battery storage.
Because they had battery storage. And then when they had it paired with solar, you know, at the end of, you know, a few day outage in one case, I mean, the customer still had 60 some odd percent availability in their battery, in their storage. And as you will all recall, last week was not exactly a sunny week. Okay. So solar can still produce even when it is not the greatest sun out but under cloud cover. So again, you know, what we've always had is this bulk delivery system. The other trend that's happening nationally, it's not just happening in Vermont, but we certainly feel it significantly at Green Mountain Power, is there is not as much consumption happening over that bulk delivery system because there are these new technologies available and because consumers want all across America. There's a study that shows within 10 years, 40% of American homes and businesses are going to be self-supplying in some way, Jane. So what that means is we have this big, costly system that is going to get used probably less. Some of that is debatable around how much you believe strategic electrification is going to add to load. But I think that most of the studies I've seen show the trends all moving in that direction. So that's the big system that we are a part of. And it's not just Vermont's not an island. We're part of the New England grid system, which is one of the big cost challenges we face going forward, because that big bulk system, for the reasons that Christine hit and Ken hit, it's getting more and more expensive every year because of cybersecurity issues, because of the integration of renewables. So there's more and more investment needed in this system that on a good day is about 40% economically efficient. So those are just few of, I would say there's probably another 10 I could list, but that are really informing us wanting to move very dramatically to this home, community, and business-based energy system, that if we do it right and we really leverage storage, we also believe we're going to save Vermonters tens of millions of dollars of regional grid costs over the next decade.
You know, there's been an interesting exchange happening on our Twitter feed about this, and Howie tweeted, you know, the future is gridless with unlimited free power at home. We will all be cutting the cord in 25 years. And Howie says, will we need utilities? Nope. You know, Ben then responds and says, well, yeah, going off the grid might work for some homes, but solar isn't viable for all households, and commercial and industrial users will still need grid infrastructure. And Alexander chimed in and said, yeah, my new house will have solar, but shading and roof space prevents net zero energy consumption. Everything will be electric, though, so I'm best positioned to benefit from Green Mountain Power's increasingly renewable portfolio. Christine Hallquist, are you trying to adapt to a model where customers may be saying, you know what, I don't need a utility. And so you're trying to figure out how to still make a profit and be viable when that's a possibility for customers moving forward?
Yeah, yes, I think we're addressing that in various different ways. You know, one of the things I'll point out is that Vermont is highly fortunate that we have forward-thinking utilities. And we have our regulators, our legislators, we're all pulling together for the same goal. You know, so when it comes to Velco, the transmission company, when we look to how we change the grid, you know, we're all saying the old solutions are no longer appropriate. For example, just building additional transmission alone might be the way we used to address these things. But now, and I'll say particularly what BEC is focused on is really four different solutions. One, the first is, you know, getting beyond the meter communications with the appliances so they can have this interactive discussion with the grid. And even if the grid goes away, as some people might forecast or hope, that technology will still be working with your home electrical system. You really need to have your electrical appliance talking to each other. So beyond the meter communications, we're looking at different price signals and how to signal pricing to those appliances. Storage is an important part of the solution. And if there are strategic investments that need to be made in the system, we're going to be very careful because that's the last thing we want to do. Because I do agree that overall, the number of kilowatt hours may reduce over time. And, you know, I wouldn't want to forecast where we're going to be 25 years from now. I think the answer, and it's the answer we focus on, is we're here for our members. We're an electric cooperative. And if that means the best thing to do is move away from a grid structure, we will do that over time. It really is, we're here first and foremost to provide what the member wants.
One of the questions that I have as we talk about these changes that not only are coming but are in the process of already changing, and you know, Ken Nolan, to your point about how in particular these very small co-ops often don't have the ability to shift as quickly and to adopt new technologies that are expensive, I worry about, and maybe you can allay my fears, but I worry about some consumers getting left behind. You know, some consumers who don't have the capital to invest in a Tesla Powerwall, you know, and I understand that utilities, you know, part of that is, oh, how can we be the business that it's still the same cost, but you're getting the new technology? But in cases where customers have to have upfront money or they're going to lose it when they sell their house, are we going to get to a point where some people in a power outage have no power outage because they've got this new technology, and other customers, whether it's because they're served by a smaller utility or because they don't have money themselves, are sort of – it's the haves and the have-nots. You know, the some people who are connected to an increasingly less reliable and less well-maintained grid system, and the others who are off and running. And I'd love, Mary, you to respond too. But Ken, what about that idea?
Yeah, I think Christine touched on this in her four points that VEC is looking at. And I think all of us are looking at maybe not exactly the same set, but the same group of challenges. I think the components here is not only part of it's physical, part of it's what type of infrastructure do we have, but part of it has to do with how do we finance this equipment? How do we change the rate structure? And that will be as important in helping those low income or other people who can't really afford to come up with the capital, helping them come along with the rest of the customers who have the ability to do that on their own. And the utilities are, and even our small members are looking at ways to make that possible. I would add, the small utilities on their own have a lot of difficulty in raising capital for some of this technology. That's part of the reason VEPSA was created 30 years ago, is to help allow it to happen. Similar to Mary's point on the national scale, we're now in conversations with other joint action agencies around the country. There are 67 groups like us, and we're all having conversations about how we work together to bring this technology into our members' territories. How do we help them finance it? How do we help the customers adopt it? So it's a national conversation that's only growing, and I think it's going to go beyond physical infrastructure to a lot of other aspects of how utilities operate.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. When last week's storm knocked out power to a third of Vermonters, it was not entirely an unexpected event. By that, I mean utilities are anticipating storms like that to increase over the next few decades. But now they're in the process of figuring out how to change their business models to deal with that and all the other demands on utilities now from customers who say, hey, I want to be my own generator. We're looking at what it all means with Vermont Electric CEO Christine Hallquist, Green Mountain Power President and CEO Mary Powell, and Vermont Public Power Supply Authority VPSA GM Ken Nolan. Mary Powell, I wanted to come back to you on this idea of the haves and the have-nots, and how do we make sure that new technology benefits Vermonters equally or as equally as possible so that you're not in a place where some people have power and some people essentially don't.
Right. Well, and I think that is such an important question. And that is so much what is informing our entire strategy about energy transformation and seeing ourselves as an energy transformation company. And one of the big lessons I think we can all learn from is telecom, where actually that very thing did happen. And what is fascinating to me is to see decades later, what the number of customers that still do have landlines and the number of customers that still depend on them. So one of the things we spend a lot of time thinking about in the future is how do we maintain this grid for decades to come? And it is going to need taking care of for decades to come. It is not going anywhere. So how do we deliver these energy transformation services in a way that benefits all Vermonters? And that's one of the areas where, back to Christine's point about our ability in a small state like Vermont, and we are all small companies. I mean, Green Mountain Power is one of the smallest investor-owned utilities in the country, in the United States of America, with 500 employees. Part of what makes us all more nimble is we can work together. And that is, you know, as we're trying to work in this new space, what we're doing is we're creating new value streams that come back and support the grid for the benefit of all Vermonters that we serve. So as we're working in this space, in the energy transformation space, everything we're doing in the transformation is about creating, earning our way into new value streams, as well as, to Christine's point, utilizing those devices. The cool thing about our storage program isn't just that it only costs a customer $15 a month, which is still something, but a lot lower than buying something like that outright. But it is because we share access with them so that we can then use that storage device to lower the costs of operating the bulk power system, which benefits all the Vermonters that we serve. And lastly, it is also why we created, Jane, that energy home of the future model with the Borkowski family in Rutland. It was about demonstrating that full energy transformation, weatherization, efficiency, smart electrification. In that case, we pretty much eliminated their carbon profile, could be done in a way that was made their home more affordable. So that is the work that is ahead of us, is to continue to lean in and innovate around how do we do this in a way that continues to make the cost of energy more affordable to every Vermonter, no matter how they want to receive it. Because 20 years from now, there may be those customers, they just want to receive it the same way they're receiving it today. And our job is to deliver it low carbon and low cost and incredibly reliable.
And you can do that?
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, if you also combine that with the microgrid work that we're doing. And I would also say the innovative work is actually not capital intensive. It's actually the bulk power system that's capital intensive. The innovative work, these technologies are relatively cost effective as compared to the cost of a major line rebuild or a major transmission line. So, you know, we're not finding that there's great capital intensity. We're finding that there are tremendous benefits. We did that solar storage facility in Rutland. So we have a microgrid already operating. We have three proposed before the regulators that we would like to get done in the next couple of years. So we continue to move towards connecting communities, and all customers benefit from that enhanced reliability, whether or not they have solar and storage.
Let's go to Dave, who's calling in from South Royalton. Hi, Dave. Go right ahead.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate you taking my call, and good afternoon, everybody. So Jane's made a couple points. First, that the last storm was very expensive, and secondly, that we can expect more storms. So I'm I'm curious as to how, besides going to ratepayers, you all plan to make yourselves more resilient. It seems to me that with the RPS out there, the portfolio standard and tier three of that standard, allowing you to do electrification where you can do storage with air source heat pump water heaters, where you can do storage with other people's batteries and their electric cars and charge them at the right time, that that's an opportunity for income for you, as well as the Volkswagen money, which is probably sitting over at ANR or will be. I wonder if you all have a plan to file comments slash a plan to use some of that Volkswagen money to help you become more resilient and make your systems more flexible than they are today.
Dave, thanks for the call. Christine Halquist, what do you think?
Sure. Yeah, that was a great question from the caller. And we are looking at that Volkswagen money, the utilities and Efficiency Vermont have met with, and we're meeting with other groups as well. You know, some of the ideas about that Volkswagen money are to put up charging stations, maybe look at electric buses. There's a lot of ideas that we can do for electrifying our grid. But getting to the resilience question, which I think is the important one here, we're fortunate enough that we are able to recover funds through FEMA, and it looks like this will be a FEMA event. You know, we've actually recovered about 75-80% of our last couple major storms. But I wouldn't want that to detract from the fact that we have an obligation to address resiliency, because that's still money from taxpayers' pocket. It's not free money, and I recognize that. So from the responsibility of building grid resilience, I'm sitting down here in Washington, D.C. I'm on where there's a group of 12 of us that provide technical advice to basically 75% of the nation's electric grid. And our chief scientist, Craig Miller, is speaking today to the National Research Council and the Senate on these resiliency issues. I think, and the reason I say that is because it is a challenging and vexing problem from the standpoint of what kind of technologies do we need to put in place. You know, from this last storm, I will say I was very proud of how the company operated. We have very good protocols. We follow the National Incident Command Management System, which is kind of the gold standard for how you respond to storms. Our field workers responded perfectly. The problem, though, as we were depending so much on communication these days, that we really have a problem in terms of how do we improve communications during a storm, and it gets down to the technology solution. When I was sitting in preparing for Hurricane Irene, there was a statement that was made by ISO New England that kind of made our faces turn white, and that is, what if we lose the telecommunications network? So those are the kind of things we have to figure out. Now, we went out and bought a bunch of satellite phones, but if we lose our network, you know, we're kind of back 30 or 40 years. So there are vexing problems, and I do believe that we have employed the best of technology and the best of process, but we've got to continue to figure out how to do it better.
You know, we also had a question from Leanne who says, yeah, you know, a lot of these solutions being discussed in the show today are more long term. But what are utilities doing in the short term to reduce restoration times during large scale events like the storm last week? And, you know, that I think is on the mind of so many people, because you can envision a Jetsons like future and it sounds wonderful. But if what you're dealing with now is, trying to refill your chest freezer because you just lost $300 worth of meat, you know, you're sort of more tuned into what's going to happen if this storm happens in January and I, you know, have no heat, and, you know, what's happening now? I don't have a battery pack. I don't have a storage system, and the grid is not going to change in the next few months. So, Mary, is there a way to change those restoration times, or is all of this going to happen in a process?
Yeah, no, that's an excellent question, and one that we actually are really focused on, and we have been for years, and we have actually shortened restoration times of major events like this. We were, really concerned about the fact that we had so many Vermonters without power last week, and we were pleased that we actually got all of them back on by 7:30 p.m. Friday, which was earlier when compared to other major storms that we've been through. So preparation is key, making sure you have the right number of resources. Last week's storm was very hard because it hit all of New England and Quebec. So we actually didn't get as many resources as we typically would have liked. So we were even more pleased with the productivity and what we were able to accomplish, without a doubt. We also, back to your great question, I still think of like this future, which is, yes, we're moving towards a different future, which can help Vermonters as we move. But we have this bulk system. We're going to have it for a long time. We are also every single year engaged in projects that have improved reliability, which is to move lines out of the woods and to the roads. And we have, you know, we have a lot of work that goes into looking at our worst performing circuits and then how do we do those. The challenge, Jane, though, at the end of the day, I think, as we all know, is when Mother Nature swoops in certain types of events, all of that good work turns to twigs and twine. I mean, that is the brutal fact. So,
well, to that point, then, I'm going to put this now because I want to make sure we get it because a lot of people have been asking it. And we got letters from both Mike and Marcy who say, bury the lines. Why won't you bury the lines?
Yeah,
wouldn't that fix
those
the whole
great
problem?
Questions. I asked that same thing because when I came to the industry in 1998, because, you know, gosh, then you don't look at them and they're underground. Well, the brutal fact challenge is that would be about $10 billion.
Just in Vermont.
Oh, just for Green Mountain Power. We actually were asked that question by the Public Utility Commission. And so, you know, coincidentally, just recently, we did a full-on analysis. Now, you know, when you look at the cost of repairing, you know, that's, I don't know, maybe a 1,000-year payback. But it's not even because you actually would have to, let's not forget, underground systems fail too. And underground systems, if you had another Irene with flooding, it actually makes restoration longer and harder because getting to underground systems is very complicated. In fact, this last storm, I always spend my time in the field, I'm sure like these folks do. And, you know, one of the most vexing challenges was in our Franklin County, and it was a development that had an underground system, and it took the team a really long time to figure out what was going on. So no. So the reality is, great question. Brutal fact is $10 billion. And by the time you do it all, you'd be rebuilding parts of it already because underground system fails too. And it also is susceptible. So
well, plus if you have everybody right. having their power at home and they're not even connected in the same way, we may not need it.
Right.
To that
yeah.
degree.
And so for my view is it's doubling down on a system that economically, as I said to you, on a good day is 40% economically efficient. So the real solution is to move as aggressively, as quickly as we can and effectively to this community home and business-based energy system and do every darn thing we can in the meantime to prepare for these events, to make sure we have the resources, to make sure we have the training, and to, you know, and also to bring a lot of love to our customers during it, whether it's delivering water and food in the field, which we do. We have a ground team that does that reaches out to customers. We work really closely with the Red Cross, with the state. You know, they are challenging, difficult times, and I wish I could say they're just going to go away, but they're not.
Well, and I see Ken nodding on the idea of yeah, burying the lines, good idea, not that easy in actually doing it. Christina, I want to come to you before we end because you are in Washington, D.C. You are meeting with the National Rural Cooperative Association, and I'm just curious if these are conversations that are happening all over the country or if Vermont finds itself in a different position or thinking differently.
No, you know, as a result, this has been a tough year with Hurricane Irma, Harvey, and Maria. And of course, we've got Puerto Rico. That you know, it's the prospects are pretty dim in restoration there. So we look at the impact of storms nationwide this year. These are questions that people are asking all across the country. So it is on the it is on the agenda for many different agencies, including the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Defense, and the Department of Energy and FEMA.
Christine Hallquist is in D.C. Thank you for that. CEO of Vermont Electric Cooperative. Christine, nice to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Ken Nolan is General Manager for the Vermont Public Power Supply Authority. Mary Powell is President and CEO of Green Mountain Power. They were in the studio with me today. Mary and Ken, thanks to you as well.
My pleasure.